This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
There's an old yid lives on the block, and I introduced him to a cell phone. It took a long time. He finally learned how to dial, and he called me up. He was screaming. Turned out he was dialing a calculator. He was pressing all the right numbers, so you can press all the right buttons, but you have to be in the right place. Okay, thank you, everyone. Shkaich, everyone, for pitching in over here. So, I once met two identical twins. Is four, right? Identical twins. We say two identical twins. You know the story of the guy that's drunk, and he comes into a bar, and he sees these identical twins walk in, and he's like, does a double take, and says, no, they're really really twins. You're not seeing double. He goes, all four of them? He goes, okay. So, I was in yeshiva. There were these twins that were mamish identical. That was as far as their genes went. As they grew older, one of them, when it turned into willpower versus genes, one of them took on a lot more weight than the other. So I met them before. I said, I'm sorry, I'm not sure I remember your first names. He goes, I'm before, he's after. I said, what's that supposed to mean? Well, so now we do commercials for the diets, you know. I do the before picture, he does the after picture, right? You know, we look the same, and this is who we are. Okay, so these pair of twins that we had in yeshiva that were really like fun guys, and I'm not saying you should do this, but what they did was they walked into the barber that was next to yeshiva. We were in high school, and it was an old Russian barber, and they drove the guy nuts. And a lot of things you have to chew before. And one of them sits down in the seat. And the barber comes out. You know the story? Yeah, and he spritzes him and he puts on the thing and gets all set. He's just ready to go. And he goes, no, stop, stop, stop. He goes, well, and change of mind, no haircut. He goes, why not? He says, it's not worth it. My hair grows back so fast that it's just not worth it. So what are you talking about? How fast does your hair grow back? Wie schnell wächst die Haare? How fast is he? He says an hour it's back. He goes, if your hair grows back in an hour, we'll give you another haircut for free, okay? Don't. He gives him a haircut, he walks out. An hour later, his brother walks in. I told you. He goes, well, I never saw such a thing in my life, right? Okay. So it says that there was a Kohen who told his wife, he's leaving Eretz Yisrael, there's a hunger, there's no food, there's sanctions, he's done for. And he told his wife, listen, people will come to you, they'll ask you shailas about Negoyim. Let me just show you. He's telling her the basic psak. I don't know if she could pass them, but that's what the Medrash says. And then when it comes to Negoim in here, so he said, look, let me show you how hair works. Every single, you'd have 1,000 hairs on your head, or 10,000, or 50,000, 100,000, 25,000. Every hair has its own pore, has its own hole that the hair comes out of and is nourished by what's inside. And there's no such thing as two hairs coming out of the same hole. And out of this hole, it's like a well that I've got the follicle. What's it called? Hair follicles. It's out of that comes out the nourishment and the moisture. So she says to her husband, if Hashem made a special well for every hair in your body, you think he didn't make a source of pranos of you? You have to run away from Eretz Yisrael. So he decided to stay. Says the Ben Ish Chai, that's why the Metzora has to shave his hair. Why? Because why does a person speak Lashon Hara? That neighbor of mine, I'm not for him. What? It would have happened anyway. I had the shidduch. I had the shidduch. My brother-in-law found out about it, and he read the shidduch for his own daughter. I can't know whatever shidduch was supposed to be. If you believe everything has their own source, no one can take anything away from you, there goes 99% of all Lashon Hara. 99.99%, not even 104%. There is such a thing as 104%. But Rai, I think Putin got 104% of the last vote, or 110%. But, Ben Ish Chai says, the Metzora shaves his hair, as if to say, hello, wake up, wake up. So there's this story, Yaakov Miller says a story that, so what he says about his stories are that, he says, some batchanim make up stories. He says, make up stories that aren't true. He only makes up stories that are true. But he said he was in a hotel someplace, and it's an old joke, but he said, Yisei B'Shem Omri, maybe Gulal. I think it goes in jokes also, I'm not sure. And the hotel owner comes, he says, we have this guy here, and he's here already 6 months. The real professional schnorrer. I gave him the best room. He says he has money to pay for it. He's here 6 months. He hasn't paid a dime. I know what to do with him. He says, let's go talk to him. So we go to talk to him. He says, you've been here 6 months, you haven't paid a dime. He says, I know. Don't worry about how much do I owe you. I says, you had the best suite. You ordered the best steaks. He says, you're here for a couple of months. You actually owe us $35,000. It's not a problem. And I go schnurring. I go around a couple of shuls. I hit the, no problem. Got it. So he says, no. What do you think? How long will it take you? 6 months. You think I'm going to believe you're going to come back here in 6 months to pay me? No, I realize you're going to say that. You come with me, you'll schnarr along with me. Because no, I'm not. I knew you're going to say that. I have a better idea. I'll stay here. You go and schnarr the $35,000, okay? You do that. Remember, one of my kids, Zalzang Ben Shishtak, Baruch Hashem, he's married with kids. But when he was in high school, boy, I knew the Manal's number. So he once called me, your kid comes late for Shachas every single day, and I give him a penalty, a money penalty. He just pays it. He pays it. And he says, why do you keep giving him the money? The whole point is that to train him, he has to come to Shachar on time. So I didn't give him a penny. He says, where's he getting the money from? I said, I don't know. So I asked him, where are you getting the money from? He says, he goes to one of the shuls, he collects. The Manal said it goes for the yeshiva, so like, why can't he collect his knas for a thing? Okay. We each have our responsibilities in this world. We each have our challenges. We have our green lights, we have our red lights, we have our mara, we have our matzah, and the wires don't cross. Sitka Satzadik from Tzadik says an amazing thing. He says, where your biggest nesayon is, where your biggest test is in life, where your major mistakes were made, where you feel, even in your ruchnias, that, oh, did I blow it, that's your biggest atzlacha. In other words, the Kadosh Baruch Hu says that's where you have to turn it around, and your biggest bracha is going to come from there. Your biggest bracha is going to come from there. He says there's Yosef HaTzadik, who's on one level, that never sinned. And there's David HaMelech, who technically was over the worst of Aver in the world. And well, she was an Eishes Ish, she was not an Eishes Ish, Bathsheba, and he comes back from it. Of course, you can't go into the Aver thinking I'm going to do tshuva. But meaning to say is, where your biggest challenge is, that's where your biggest bracha is. And sometimes a person says, if I have this kind of a taiva, I mean, I must be garbage. Like, why would Hashem? It's not true, just the opposite. So Simon, that's where the potential of Kedusha is. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, right, just finished a great poskim of our generation. He had just finished his final preparations for the Seder, and the day brought an endless line of people pleading for help. Inquirers and phone calls. And go to a Rav's house, Erev Pesach, offer to help him. Listen to the shnailers that come in. Do I have to buy the chametz in the hospital room? Yes. No. My Pesach dika parva knife got mixed up with my chametz dika milchiga one. I cut the Pesach brownies with it. What's the din? Eat the brownies before Pesach. How do I kasher my dentures? Just put them in hot water. But I can't find them. You have a problem. Right? Does my cousin in Mexico have to be baidik his office in South Africa if he's spending Pesach in Switzerland? let him ask his local rabbi in Switzerland, okay? And, then the people come to the Rav, should I go to my parents or the Seder or her parents? Or comes to the Rav and says, I want to ask you about matzah. I have a shiloh about matzah. Yeah. And a shiloh about dalakaisis. Yeah, yeah. And so what's the shiloh? It's complicated shiloh. Can we privately? Yeah. Yeah, what's the shiloh? I don't have any. Where do I get them from? So how do I get my in-laws to stop judging me? And Shlomo Zalman had a sixth, seventh, and eighth sense. I was once by the Debrett Sina Rose, maybe the Chashav Rabbanim in Bar Park. I'll tell you two quick stories. One was, I was sitting there, I was selling my chametz, and four calls in a row came in about a person that could be by the chametz in the hospital, and also could he make a bracha because he has a catheter. And the Rav said, oh, Shiloh, let me think about this Shiloh. And he answered him exactly what to do. And all the four times, so I asked him, you may ask the Rav, Shiloh, you passed him this question four times already. You must have had 1,000 times in your life. He says, this guy is in a hospital room. He's in pain. I should just answer him. At least let me show that I'm, let me deal with this, right? At least let me show I'm being nice about El with him. So Shlomo Zalman had that. He had a sixth, seventh, and eighth sense. Today was the Yartzeit of the Sklen Rebbe. The one that was nifter 3 years ago. So just a story that somebody told me. Erev Pesach. There's a Yid that comes in. He doesn't daven there. He comes in. He's sitting and learning over there. And the Rav calls him over and he gives him $1,000 for Pesach. The guy's eyes shine up. And he walks out. So he went to the Rebbe. You don't know the guy. Like, why did you give him $1,000 for? He says, most people don't have time to learn Erev Pesach. And if he does want to come to learn Erev Pesach, his wife is a tzedekah. She says, you go learn, or that's the way, you know, the other guy. The wife said to the husband, you know, husband said, how can I help? She says, just get out of the house. You know? He's back after a half hour. Why are you back so fast? Limit how much I can help, right? So go. Why is the guy walking into this Galena Shul? He doesn't daven here. He wants to learn. There's places in Bar Park, big places made to learn. He obviously was sent here to ask, maybe you have money for Pesach. And he's embarrassed to ask. And he picked it up, right? It's hard to understand. So Shlomo Zalman was that way also. He had a special smile, clear answers, word of advice. So Reb Shlomo Zalman was finishing off the, imagine he had such an Erev Pesach, right? He's finishing off the last minute preparations for his own Seder. And the family members that are accompanying the shul are gently trying to speed things up a little bit because they're not going to start the minyan until he comes. And he wishes his family good Yom Tov. And there's another knock on the door. There's another knock on the door. You know, 13th hour. Somebody else has a shayla. So Shlomo Zalman dismissed all attempts to defer this person. They opened up the door. There was a woman there, Rahman al-Aslan, who lives in the building and just lost her husband. And she's standing there with tears in her eyes, and she's holding a big bowl of Roman lettuce for her martyr. And she says, I'm not sure that I checked them properly because my husband always used to do it and he's not here. So you would hardly consider this a dire emergency, right? And the other people in Rosh Lema Zama's house were saying, well, we have plenty of extra martyr, okay? We got to get to shul. And one of them even said, yeah, you can come to us for the Seder. And Rosh Lema Zama dismissed everybody. He said, go to shul. But they're going to wait for you. Tell them not to. And oblivious to the setting sun, Rosh Lema Zama asked her to place her bowl of martyr on the table. And he sat down. And he meticulously and carefully scanned every centimeter of every one of its leaves to look for worms. When he finished, he put them all back into the bowl, and he told her, your maror is clean. Your maror is clean. What did he mean to say? Anybody?
You're good.
You're good. I know you're bitter. I know what's going on. Hashem knows your pain. He realized that she wasn't just coming to ask about the leaves. So maror is not a break in hashgacha chas v'shalom. The reason that there's the Svasena says the reason there's such a stress, matzah umar menachem lefanecha, that it goes together, and kairachos, yeah, and kairachos, and beshamay besil, right? Argue about kairach, whether that's the main mitzvah or at least it's the zecher lemigdash kehillel, is to show that the maror in our life is hashgacha. It's not that God is watching us; He dumps us, and therefore it's maror. No, the maror is also part of the hashgacha. And each generation and every individual is assigned to matzah and maror, and sometimes both, usually both. And we can't always necessarily get it down here in this world. And the Seder night, says the Sfasemis, is called Seder. It's to remind us that at every leg of our journey in Golis follows a picture-perfect route. Where the world is going, nobody knows. People say Biden doesn't know what's happening. None of us know what's happening, okay? Where the world is going, nobody knows. Our job isn't to make sense of it. It's to understand that we don't get it. We don't have the entire picture, but there's a Seder. There's a plan. There is a plan. There's a plan for the world. There's a plan for you and me, and there's a reason that you and me are here where we are. Now, Shlomo Zalman understood that she wasn't just asking about worms on her lettuce. You know what I mean? She was crying about her bitter situation, and when the Gadol Hadar took off his hat and jacket and on his way to shul, it went through her maror, right? And a big chunk of her pain lifted from her chest. But all he said was that your maror is clean. She knew what he meant, okay? Somebody, Reb Chaim Kanievsky, getting back just a moment again. He never gave a musa drasha to anyone, right? He wasn't part of the Mayatzes, even though he was asked to. He wasn't a Rosh Hashiva. He was disconnected from the world, but more connected than anyone else. You know that he only spoke on a phone twice in his life? On any phone? Not talking about a smartphone, talking about a phone. Once his son in America just had a serious operation, he spoke to him right afterwards. Once there was a shiloh of a machloikis, they said, you're the only one that could stop it. They say the story that his wife had a cassette tape. You know what a cassette tape is? It's still one in the Museum of Natural History. But yeah, you see what? So she said, she gave him a cassette and said, you want to listen to what my father said, this drasha? So he put the tape to his ear. So she explained, well, you have to put it into a tape recorder. Okay. That's what they say in the Shaila. Somebody came to ask Reb Chaim if you can play basketball on Shabbos. So he asked what it is, so they explained how you play. So he said it's a shaykh to put the ball in the net before Shabbos. Right? they say that he doesn't understand the musicians in Bnei Brak. They only know one niggun. Yamim al yamei melech. Wherever he goes, they're playing that niggun. I know one niggun. So then he really not know? Yes and no. So there's a great story going around. The person saying the story, he said 25 years ago he was one of those what do they call the people that take pictures? Paparazzi. Yes, Eric said it right. By mistake, said it right.
Haggers.
Okay. So he used to hang around by Reb Chaim 25 years ago, and Reb Chaim sometimes put down milk for a cat. Don't ask me what the cheshbon was. And he grabbed a picture from the size of the thing. Reb Chaim was very upset that he grabbed the picture. And he said, give me the film. And he didn't know what to do because he had other pictures on the film of the mice. He said, give me the film. And he took out the film and he gave it to him. And he ran off. 25 years later, this is a very important story. 25 years later, he comes with his son. Well, now he surely forgot the story. He comes with his son's bar mitzvah. And he's standing in line. Reb Chaim sees him. He goes, I'm waiting 25 years to ask you mechila. I think I was like too harsh with you. Really, really, I took away your film. Did I have a right to do that? I'm so sorry. Reb Chaim was so makar of him. So he said, a year later, his other son was getting ben mitzvah. He said, I'm a ben bias there. So he went in and he said, who are you? He didn't recognize him. So what's pshat on the story? Can anyone tell me pshat on the story? Anyone want to try? Chassi, you want to try? I don't think what pshat on the story is. Not everyone at the same time now. Go ahead.
The reason to remember him originally, because he wanted to ask him if he loved.
Right. If he had a reason to remember him, he took up part of his memory remembering him. The reason to remember him was because he felt he has to ask him mechila. Once he accomplished asking him mechila, it wasn't in his memory. It was like deleted from his memory banks, because he used every ounce of his memory to.
Only the things that were needed to be fixed.
Right. No, he used every. Ramesh also once said that. He would ask him about memorizing a phone number. He says that everyone has a limit to what their memory is. He uses it to memorize Kalat Torah Kula. What he has to know, he has to know. So what he had to know, he remembered 25 years. What he didn't have to know, wasn't. So I read a story today of someone that came to Reb Chaim, and he said his wife is expecting a baby any day, and that. He was like, he said, her sugar count shot up, and it's really dangerous, and diabetes is not good, and for anyone. And so he's listening. He didn't really answer him, so he asked him a second shayla. I hope Bez Hashem Yisbarach, when the baby's born, I want to know the name Shraga Feivel. It's Feivel, a Yiddish name. Reb Chaim is very careful with names. So he said to him, he answered him on both shaylas. He said about the sugar, about the diabetes, go talk to the Rebbetzin. And about Shraga Feivel, he starts laughing. I never heard of a girl named Shraga Feivel. Okay? So he goes into the Rebbetzin, and the Rebbetzin says, what, your wife has diabetes, she's expecting a baby. So she was Matzah Shabbos, she cuts a piece of challah she just baked. And the challah was baked in honey. And he gives it to her. He says, this is not exactly what her, he says, give it to her. He says, no, you don't understand. So she goes back to the Rebbetzin. Whatever the Rebbetzin did, do. So anyway, he comes home. His wife seemed to have more munas lachom than she did. She came the next day. The doctor said to retake the blood test. Must have been a mistake because her sugar level is normal. It can't be. She took it again. Mara says that warm challah, matzah Shabbos, warm food, warm drinks, matzah Shabbos heals a person. And as far as what, yes, 2 days later they had a girl. Okay. So again, so you see everything and you know nothing. Which is it? Which one is it? I want to try to explain this a little bit. When a woman has a baby, what does the pasuk say? Isha kisas riyav yolda zacha, she's tomei shivas yamim, right? How could it be after childbirth there's toma? Childbirth should be the most tardic thing in the world. How could there be toma afterwards? So the Kotzker Rebbe says there's such great kedusha as the child is being born that in the void of the kedusha there's toma. Just like when the the video guys turn off the big bright lights, it looks dark in the room. Ramosha says, Amari de Gavart. One of the reasons the baby has to wait 8 days for Bris Milah is to go through a Shabbos. You want the baby to go through a Shabbos before Bris Milah, because Shabbos is what clarifies as Matayar the baby. You don't understand how you need Shabbos unless you first experience Tumah. That's what Moshe says. In other words, sometimes we feel, I can't go into a Shabbos after what I looked at this week. No, just the opposite. You need Shabbos. It's Shabbos has to be set up in such a way that it's Matayar you. Let me try to explain it this way. Anyone know the difference between Celsius and Fahrenheit? Where that comes from? Is there a marker here? Okay. Here's where it comes challenging. So try to imagine, okay? I don't know if I'm scientifically 100% right, but for the most, let's say this is the scale, okay? And let's say this is hot, and this is cold. And let's say this is Celsius. How do you spell Celsius, anyone?
C-E-L-S-I-U-S.
I knew that once. Okay. And there's Fahrenheit. We'll leave it for this. Celsius basically is how things are measured in Europe, and things were always measured. Celsius says that zero is the freezing point. Okay? Zero is like, let's see, a piece of ice. That looks like a piece of ice, right? Zero is the freezing point. Ice cream, okay, whatever. Zero is the freezing point. And 100 is the boiling point. That is Celsius. Which makes a lot of sense, that 0 degrees should be freezing and 100 should be boiling, okay? But then you have Fahrenheit. Anyone know the shayrish of the word Fahrenheit?
That sounds German.
There's a professor Fahrenheit. I think it was Daniel Gabriel. I don't know if it was Professor Celsius. Right. He was Professor Celsius also? Okay. There we go. Maybe they were cousins. I don't know. One davened Sfarad, one davened Ashkenaz. I combine this one out. So he, for whatever reason, decided that his zero and his 100 was based on a certain liquid that he was measuring. I forgot which chemical. Every chemical freezes and boils at a different point. Yeah?
Water mixed with salt.
With salt? Okay, could be. Maybe that was Dr. Salt. No, Dr. Salt?
Yeah. Okay.
So, basically, Fahrenheit, what Fahrenheit, the scale on Fahrenheit is that zero, in other words, if this is Celsius and this is Fahrenheit, it would be something like this. Zero would be about here on the Fahrenheit side. And it would be 32 degrees Celsius.
Other way around?
Yeah. Right? Sorry. Okay, got you. I would say it's good. I'm not a rocket scientist. So zero would be Celsius. Would be
32 Fahrenheit is 0 Celsius.
Yeah. On the Celsius side. So this would be 32, right?
Yeah.
This would be 32. So really, the zero should be higher up. So this would be 0 Celsius, okay?
Zero Celsius is
32
Fahrenheit.
Is 32 Fahrenheit, okay. We're getting there. Right? More or less like this? 0 Celsius is 32 Fahrenheit. But you can't just say, the way you figure out the difference between Celsius and Fahrenheit is not just saying it's a difference of 32. Because he's saying that the 100 is over here, and in Fahrenheit, let's say in Celsius, okay. I know it's confusing, and I should have done this beforehand. But let's say the 100 is the boiling point, which is simple, 0 to 100. He has his boiling point much less. So boiling point. In other words, the 100 Fahrenheit, 100 is not Fahrenheit. The 100. Boiling point Fahrenheit in water would be 212 degrees. My point is, because you can't figure this out, because it's also a pikabola, chesed, vura, tferes, netzach, which that's why it doesn't stim 100% with science. But more or less, but my point that I'm trying to make is like this. That I can come to you and say something is 40 degrees. And if that's 40 degrees Celsius, it's pretty hot, right? And I can come to you and say it's 40 degrees Fahrenheit. It means something else totally. And I remember once I borrowed a car from someone in Montreal, and I was driving someplace, and all of a sudden I looked at the speedometer and it said 110. And I froze, and I hit the brakes. I said, what are you doing? He said, 110. He says, 110 kilometers per hour. Take it easy. Relax. Not 110 miles per hour. Okay? So really, what's a scale? A scale is based on what the beginning is and what the end is. And I want to bring out is that we have no real way of measuring what's going on in our lives. It doesn't make sense to us. It doesn't make sense to us because our scale of measuring things is limited. We in our minds think, what's the best possible scenario in the world. Happy married family in a gorgeous home up in the country, right? Try to imagine what's the best thing in the world. Peace and everything, and you know, everything is just electric cars, no more gas cars, and peace, and the older people in Ukraine and Russia hugging each other, and there's zero crime, and the mamish solar energy, and mamish, the world is, right? Imagine the best possible case scenario. The worst possible case scenario we could imagine. Rahman al-Islam, I can tell a lot of people I think are in the worst possible case scenario. People dying and they're sick and disowning them, Rahman al-Islam. And the Rabbi Hashem has a different scale of what's the worst and what's the best. And that's why we can't possibly understand it. Because we're not here long enough on this world to try to connect the two and to see where the two kind of work together. The Chama and the Levana, says the Mashgiach. So what happened when the Eibishter made the Levana smaller? Then what's happening is you're looking in life at a different scale. The Chama is constantly shining. The Levana gets smaller and smaller and smaller, disappears. It's gone. It's over. It's dark. It's death. I'll never recover. And all of a sudden it starts getting bigger and bigger again. Eventually they even out. Eventually we realize the Levana never got even darker. It was just its exposure to the sun. So therefore, how we were able to see it. And the Mashal HaMa'adayim and the Zoyer is the Chassan is the Kala, and the Levana is the Kala. And the Kala like disappears from the Chassan. And the Chassan goes out to, his job is to go out and to bring her back and to draw her in. What happens Shabbos Parshas HaChodesh, what's representative of Shabbos Parshas HaChodesh is that we're starting again from scratch. We're starting from the beginning. The Chassan and the Kala, the moon and the Kala are aligned, especially in a Shanim Yiberes. The Zeresh Shimshon says that really what happens in Hashemayim, there's never any bad Gezerah. But if it's inability of the Makabal to be a Makabal the Gezerah, if I can have the most beautiful machine in the world that runs on 212 volts and I'm connecting it to 110, all of a sudden there's this big explosion and blowout. What happened? Ooh, this machine is terrible. It's not terrible. It's the Makabal. Couldn't be Makabal it. When things fall apart down here in this world, Hashem's Gezerah, Me'iti Le'teitzei Arois. It's just that the Makabal can't receive it. The Levana is too small. And therefore, it comes across to us in our minds, the way we measure things, it comes across to us in this way. He says, Kriyas Yamsev was the same Zera for Yidden and for the Mitzrayim. It only manifested itself for the Mitzrayim because they could not be Makabal the Ha'ara of Kriyas Yamsev. So, being as it may be, there are so many things that are going on in this world, it's so hard to understand. And what happens on Pesach is, a magical amunah in our hearts, the world has a seder. God says, on my scale, it's going to work. The second your neshama leaves the guf, it's no longer Fahrenheit, it's Celsius. And then, whoa. Because the good is so good that it's so much more than we could possibly imagine that it justifies any difficulty down here in this world. It's not even a question. So let me just leave you with this story. There's a man, he runs off to, he's up to his 13th baby. And he runs off to Bnei Brak. He runs off to Hadassah Hospital. He has a bed. You know that old joke, right? A bunch of people waiting in Hadassah Hospital. And one guy comes running out. A doctor tells him, oh, Baruch Hashem, you should know that you just had seven babies. What are seven babies called? You just had four babies. What are four babies called? Quintuplets? Quadruplets? He said, he lives in Kiryas Arba. I'm married. That's just Gacha brothers. Next guy comes in and goes, you just had seven babies. He goes, wow, he lives in where? He lives in Kiryas. Beersheva, right. You had eight babies. He lives in Kiryat Shemayna. Then you see this. Yishalayim the Giri jumps out of the window. He's running for his life. What's your problem? He goes, I live in Meir Sharim, he says. You know what I mean? I'm not sticking around, he says. Okay. So, this person is in he's in Hadassah Hospital. It's right before Shabbos. He lives in Beitar. He's having his 13th kid. Everything's okay. But the baby's not coming as quickly as they would have liked. She tells her husband, it's almost Shabbos. I don't want the kids to be alone Shabbos. I have to be by neighbors. Do me a favor, go home. I'm in good hands here. How could I leave you at such a time? Guy on. He doesn't know, yes, no, yes, no. She says, you have 10 minutes to make the last bus. Go. And he's like, I should. And finally, the nurse sticks out her head out of the birthing room and says, Yalda, girl. He sticks his head in Mazel Tov. She goes, great, go. And he runs, he makes the next bus. And he comes home, mommy, Yalda, mommy had a girl. They're all excited. They're dancing all around the place. They're so excited. And I'm thinking of one of my four-year-old girl. Now she's married, Baruch Hashem. My four-year-old girl, she said the Mora told me that once. The Mora told my wife that she asked the class, if your mother's having a baby, would you rather have a boy or a girl? Each one said their things. She said like this: in the summer, she would rather have a girl. If the baby's born in the winter, she would rather have a boy. So he asked her, like, why? So she explained, because if there's a bris, she would have to come late to school. She doesn't mind coming late to school, but she doesn't want to miss a day of day camp. So if the baby's born in the summer, she would want her mother to have a girl. Left to our own vices, that's how we would run the world. You understand? Just, you know, it's just we have the same. So anyway, to make a long story short, they had made up, it was Parshas told us, so they had made up that they're going to name the girl a Rivka. Because they didn't have a particular babbit, and all the grandmothers were alive, and after the Parsha. So he gives a kiddush and shul, he names the girl Rivka, and they throw candies, and so excited, the girl's named Rivka. Matzah Shabbos, the mother calls, and she goes to how were the Arabists by the Shalom Zachar? And, you know, he tells his wife, okay, good joke, you know. And she starts again about the Shalom Zachar, and he says, okay, once a joke, okay, twice. She says, what joke? What are you talking about? What Shalom Zachar? What, you had a... We had a boy. No, you didn't. You had a girl. No, we had a boy. I have the boy. The evidence is in my hand. You know what I mean? She said, but the nurse said, well, here's the problem. The guy wasn't very into digduk. The nurse said, Yulada, she gave birth. He thought she said, Yalda, a girl. So now they have a girl, they have a boy named Rivka. Which could be complicated, you know what I mean? Imagine, Yamayra Bachar Bar Mitzvah Rivka, you know, imagine coming with his talis bital, you know, tefillin and Rivka, you know. So what happened was, well, we'll give you a pink talis bottle, you know. So they asked Rabbi Yashiv if they could change the name. So Rabbi Yashiv said that Ishta Kigufay, and you named her after Rivka, Yitzchak's wife, so change his name to Yitzchak. So he came running and said, no, but there's a Zayd that they want to give a name after. The Zayda's name was not Yitzchak. The Zayda's name was, I don't know, Yisachar Doiv, Alexander Ziskin, whatever. Not Yitzchak. So he said, no, but you already gave the name Rivka, so you can't switch from Rivka. You can't leave the baby with the name Rivka. But you can't switch the name once the baby was born. But Ishtek Yigufay, so Rivka and Yitzchak is the same thing. So he tells Rabbi Yashiv, because I'm a klotz, and I don't know the difference between Yalda and Yulada, so the baby's going to name Yitzchak the rest of his life? So he said, no. Because the baby had to be named Yitzchak. So therefore, you made a mistake between Yalda and Yulada. You understand? Which scale do you work by? And I think this explains Reb Chaim. Here he sees what's going on from one side of the world to the other. And here he sees, right, there's a bacher came into him about a certain problem. He told the bacher, stop eating basa b'chalav. The guy walks out, you eat basa b'chalav? He said, well, I'll tell you the truth, I love milk chocolate. And sometimes it's only after an hour after Fleishi, 2 hours after Fleishi, like, how did he know? So they went to him, it was Ruch HaKadosh, not Ruch HaKadosh. How do you know? It says in the Zohar, if someone's not careful with Basa B'Cholav, he has the image of a Gedi, of a goat on his forehead. It says, like, Sevashal Gedi B'Cholav Imai. So it's simple, no? No, it's not. Okay? Because trust me, that if one of you ate chocolate, whatever, you don't have to worry about me seeing a goat on your forehead. Because He measured things with a different scale. He sees things differently. And that's what we have to understand. The reason we don't understand something, and you can't explain it, is we're not measuring it on the same scale. And so the Chesed Lavram says that from Purim until Pesach, the Eibishter drops little droppers. It's a 30-day treatment period. And each day our heart is cleansed more and more, so that the night of the Seder we reach our ultimate accomplishment, and that is not to understand, we'll understand of Yeneveld, but to believe that in a Kaddish Baruch Hu scale, everything is perfect. And the reward that we have, because our scale, things are so off, the reward that we have to get to that scale is off the charts, Bez Hashem Yisbarach. Thank you, everyone, for coming.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.